Charlotte Purcell was pictured with her daughter, Patricia. She was gradually coping with having only one arm. Having three babies, she adapted, said a relative. In time, she would relearn how to make beds, peel potatoes, and even hang out washing, the clothespins stuffed into her mouth. As she told reporters, she was haunted by the thought that the sacrifice of her arm had not been enough. The radium ran right through her, and she didn't know where it might strike next. The final piece in Doty's series focused optimistically on Catherine Donohue. She waits, hopefully, for another call to the city for an operation. Privately, Tom had to whisper to Doty, "It will never come." The women found the publicity got them motivated again. Charlotte's son Donald remembered. Mom used to get dressed up and take her friends, and they'd go up to Chicago to see these lawyers. A few months later, Charlotte, Catherine and Marie engaged a new attorney, Jerome Rosenthal, for their case before the IIC. They also decided to approach the government for help. Their target was Frances Perkins, the Secretary of Labour, the first woman ever to serve in a presidential cabinet. It was Tom who contacted her, having telephone conversations and personal correspondence with the secretary. Whatever this quiet man said clearly made an impact, for no less than three federal departments began investigating. The case was snowballing, and Tom now dug deep for the most important act of all. His wife had told him about the company tests, and he judged, since it was clear Radium Dial had lied about the results, that getting hold of the original data would provide powerful evidence in court. On 20th of May, 1936, he decided to ask Mr. Reed outright for the results. He felt they should have been given to the women anyway, or at least to him as Catherine's husband. He was only asking for what was rightfully theirs. "This day," Tom said, "I wanted to find out the name of them doctors who were supposed to examine them women that was working there that didn't give them a report." Reed might have seen him coming. At any rate, the two met each other not in the studio, but on the streets of Ottawa. Tom started out calmly enough. "Why wasn't the report given to me?" he asked. Reed, taken aback by Tom's direct question, did as he had always done and tried to ignore the situation. He brushed by him. "I only have another question to ask you," shouted Tom at the superintendent's retreating back, and then he ran to catch up with him. "I only want to help the women." Mr. Reed had had enough. Perhaps there was a guilt eating away at him which led to what happened next. "He started to swing at me," Tom remembered with some astonishment. Tom, though small, had an Irish temper. "I don't think anybody in our family," one of his relatives later said, "would go out of their way to cause a confrontation, but they wouldn't let one go if it came to them. I'm sure he'd have been angry. I'm surprised he stayed as level-headed as he did." With Reed, the man who had overseen his wife's slow murder and then fired her when the poison's effects started to show, now hitting him, Tom dropped all pretense of civilized conversation. "I swung at him," he remembered with some satisfaction. He said Reed got excited. The two men brawled in the street, hitting out at one another in a fisticuff encounter. Tom found himself landing blows for Catherine, for Inez, for Charlotte's lost arm, for Ella, for Mary, for Peg. Reed floundered under the attack, and the police were called. Even though Mr. Reed had started it, the respected superintendent of Radium Dial had Tom Donohue arrested. He brought charges of assault and battery and disorderly conduct. Tom was now in the hands of State Attorney Alma Moon. facing two criminal charges.